what do you say about the following story, gentlemen?
Yes.
There's a Gemara on Shabbos. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis taught the following story, a very interesting story. There was a person, a certain person, that lived up in the north in the Galil, and he was desperate for money, and he went and he hired himself out for a 3-year contract. In other words, he contracted himself out to be a laborer for 3 years to a certain estate owner, farm owner, and the 3 years were up, and it was Erev Yom Kippur. So he went to his boss, who had worked faithfully for 3 years, and said, give me my wages now, so I can go home and feed my wife and children. You've been away from home for 3 years. He said, I'm sorry, I don't have any money. He said, okay, so give me produce instead. You're a farmer, give me produce instead. He said, I don't have any. Alright, so give me a piece of land at least, give me a piece of your land so I can go and like maybe cash some money out of it, I can get a loan on it. He says, I don't have any land. I have any land. You've been working for him for 3 years, he doesn't have any land. it's a lie, right? So give me some livestock, you get a house full of, a barn full of animals there. I've been tending to them for 3 years. He says, Amy, I don't have any. Such a liar between his teeth. Tainly Korin Mikastes, give me some cushions and blankets, pillows you have in the house. I said that, I've been sleeping here for 3 years. Hey, I don't have any. What's this guy? He's lying through his teeth. Hifshil Kalev Lo'ocher. So, what did the worker do? He took whatever he had, and his clothes, whatever he had, tied it up in the bundle and threw it over his shoulder, and holach lebeisai b'pacha nefesh. He went very rejected and feeling very, very, very low. He went home, Erev Yom Kippur. No, 3 years in the way wrong. He's got nothing to show. No, absolutely. Lachar regel, after Sukkos, that year, noto balabayis chorot, the balabayis, the person he worked for, took all his wages that he owed him, and he went together with three donkeys loaded with gifts full of food and drink and different types of beautiful garments besides his wages, and he went to this worker's house who lived somewhere else, and they had a big suda and they ate and they drank and he gave him his wages and all the gifts and they made up for what he didn't do before, and left him those 2 weeks with nothing. He said, tell me, the employer said, tell me, when I told you I had no money, what did you think? He said, what did you think, what kind of liar did you think I was? He said, well, I thought perhaps that you had a very, very big business deal, that it was a one-time opportunity, and you put all your cash into that business deal. So you really didn't have any cash. He said, good. He said, when I told you that I didn't have any animals, what did you think? What kind of liar did you think I was then? He said, well, I thought maybe you had rented them out to somebody. He said, and when I told you, when you asked me if I have any land, you knew I had land, how could I say that I didn't have land? What did you suspect me of when I told you I didn't have land? He said, well, I thought maybe you leased it, your land out to somebody else. And when I told you I didn't have any produce to pay you, what kind of liar and thief did you think I was? He said, well, I thought perhaps that they weren't yet misered and you couldn't give them. It's not yours. And when I told you that I didn't have any cushions and pillows, what did you think then? What kind of cheater do you think I was? He said, I thought maybe that you were makdish all your property to the Beis HaMikdash. So the employer told him, he said, it's like an oath, he swore, he said, that's really the truth. Everything that you suspected was really the truth. I did have my animals rented out, and I did have my land leased out, and I did have this big, huge business deal that I put all my cash into, and all the produce was not misered. There wasn't time to miser. It's a big job. All this storehouse full of food, miser all the food, and really I made hektish. Everything that I owned, I made hektish. You're right. Everything you said was right. Vatem keshem shedantuni. He says, and just like you judge me favorably, Hashem should judge you favorably. That's the story.
Mm.
Beautiful, beautiful story.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful story. So we see the power of judging that the Chazal learned from this story, the importance of judging somebody favorably. Now, you know, if I told you, if you judge somebody favorably, you're going to get a big piece of Olam Haba. That's a wonderful reward. But the Chazal don't say it. If you judge somebody favorably, Hashem will judge us favorably. That's an interesting thing, you know, when somebody does something wrong to us, so in our eyes, somebody didn't speak to you nicely. They speak to you nicely. Whoa, we're so angry. We're so offended. We're ready to condemn the person and then throw him in prison. Life sentence. No? Just for not talking nicely to him. The guy should go, she was burned alive. You know, you're pull him, hang him by his thumbs, right? You know? There's a klola, there's a curse in Yiddish. Hope you never heard anybody say, gain der. It's going in the ground. I mean, be buried like you should not. So Tesla says when a person gets angry, really in the root of the anger is you want the guy to be swallowed up by the ground he's standing on and disappear forever. Now you get angry at a person, you're just civilized. So, you know, you don't express it. The Nazis, you march on, they actually did it. But that's the power of anger. So we're very, very harsh. A person can be extremely harsh when another person treats you in a way that you feel is inappropriate or not in line with your personal level of dignity. Right? But when we do it to other people, so what do we think? I really shouldn't have said that. I had such a headache and my stomach was hurting this morning and I just got that bad news and... We don't think about ourselves. The guy should be hung by his toenails. Yeah, I should be hung by my toenails. I should be this. I should be that. We don't. The same harshness. We don't. We find all these limud schus, right? We're malamud schus on ourselves. I really shouldn't talk. But. So that type of but we should use towards the other person. So when a person is malamud schus, the reva, the reward that we get from that is that Hashem judges us favorably. And wouldn't that be nice if everything we did, Hashem would, when we didn't get up on time, when we didn't learn properly, when we didn't... The real truth is, we laxed. We're laxing. But there is a limud schus. I really did have a headache today, and it really was hard, and it was a difficult Gemara, my chavrus taka was a pain in the neck today, and there are circumstances which made it a lot more difficult. So we want the Rebbeinu Shem to take that into consideration. All those difficulties, we want him to take it into consideration and lighten the burden upon us. Right? So there's a mida keneged mida. If we treat other people like that, then Hashem will judge us like that. If we treat other people with harshness, if we're exacting in our judgment of other people, ignorance is no excuse. You should never behave like that. You're a rabbi, you're a yeshiva bacher, you're whatever you are. No excuse. Absolutely no excuse. So when you come to Hashem, and Hashem says, so, you didn't learn properly. I had a headache. No excuse. What? No excuse. You're merciful. What about you? You weren't so merciful in judging other people. So there's a mida keneged mida. Now, this person was obviously extremely righteous, extremely big tzaddik, this person, this worker. 3 years, he obviously a desperate person. He rents himself out for 3 years. And to bend over backwards to judge this person favorably in ways that we wouldn't even dream of. And he had to have a creative mind at the time when he's waiting for his wages. And so it was a tremendous tzidkus. This person, you can't imagine who this person really was, who was such a great tzaddik. And it's amazing that the Gemara doesn't tell us who it was. But the Shi'ultas says that this person was Rebbe Akiva. This is Rebbe Akiva, obviously before he became Rebbe Akiva. This person was Rebbe Akiva. So we see that Rebbe Akiva, the Gemara brings that as a dogma, as an example of how refined Rebbe Akiva's midas were even before he became a Talmud Chacham. That's why the Rochel, the daughter of Kalva ben Savua, was willing to marry him because she recognized his refinement of character. He was Snuya Male. He was extremely, extremely modest and had very refined character. You see from here what a refined character, what a beautiful Jew who could judge a person like that. By the way, if these are extreme, you know, this is like pushing the barriers of Dan Lukavskus. It's wild, you should know, most of the time, if somebody does something wrong to you, says something wrong, does something wrong to you, and you cannot find any limud zchus except in a wild way, you'll find out it's true. Do it, and you'll see that most of the time it's right, it's correct. Besides that, the judge, Hashem judges favorably, like he said here, like the Baal Bayis told him, avoda kafay, like he couldn't believe it. The voice says, "You're right. It's exactly the things you thought was correct." Even the Rebbe Kiva certainly didn't know that; otherwise, he wouldn't have asked for it. But one of the other advantages of the Kaf Swiss Rebbe said, "You have a choice: how you want to live. Do you want to be miserable today, or do you want to be happy today?" It's a no-brainer, right? But if we go through life, we go through every circumstance of being offended by people judging unfavorably, you know what? It hurts. Then the pain remains, right? But if you judge people favorably, guess what? You'll find that the pain goes away. It's a much more pleasant life, and you'll be a more pleasant person, and other people more pleasant around you, and the bottom line is, it's 99.9% of it is true. That you'll judge them favorably, that whatever you'll come up with, it'll come out, it'll be true. Anyway, he was obviously a very refined individual, even though he was not a knowledgeable Torah person. How does this fit with another statement that we know the Rebbe, it was attributed to Rebbe Akiva? Rebbe Akiva said before he became a Talmud Chochem, before he learned Torah, he says, "If you would bring me a Talmud Chochem, anashchenu kechamor, I would bite him like a donkey." As Rebbe Akiva had such disdain for Talmud Chochemim, he wanted to break their bones. How does that fit with the Rebbe Akiva, who was so forthcoming in his judging people favorably, but when it came to Talmid Chacham, he was ready to break their bones?
Yeah. Okay, I guess.
Yeah.
To be honest, they didn't dumb him. They weren't dumb as lessons for him. They perhaps thought, "Then why aren't you learning?"
No, that was their attitude for him. Because
he didn't know anything.
Yeah, it was their attitude for him. He felt like they were putting him down.
So why did
he was on a lower level than them,
uh-huh.
So they looked down upon him.
So why couldn't he judge them favorably? Still judge them favorably. So why couldn't he still judge them favorably?
He was probably maybe he thinks, thinks, okay, I'll judge everyone else.
Why only Tom? Because he had a vendetta against him.
Because he felt
he was ready to judge everybody favorably as long as he didn't suffer from that person. If he suffered from that person, then
because then that would fit the story.
So we still don't understand why Talmid Chacham. Why was he so venomously angry at Talmid Chacham? Yeah.
It must have been that he had something in Talmid Chacham, but it wasn't dunning them one way or other. He just knew about them in a way that was gluey. Whatever it was that made him angry, it was not something. Therefore, it wasn't something he didn't have to judge them.
The Rambam says in the Moses, how far does it go? You know, like judges don't be afraid. The Ma'aseh b'Chasidecha, there was a righteous person, pious person, who couldn't afford a cabin on the boat. So he slept in the bottom of the boat. So there was a rich guy, you know, in first class, who decided he was going to go take a tour of the boats. And he saw this pious person asleep in the bottom of the boat. He thought it was a stowaway. He says, "I'm going to teach this guy a lesson. I'll teach this guy a lesson." And he urinated on him. And the chassid, when he woke up, obviously very quickly, thought to himself, "If he died to Hamutes, according to his, you know, incorrect way of thinking, I deserve this." That was how far it went, the beauty of an neshama. You can go so far as to judge somebody favorably even if he's wrong. In other words, he's wrong, but he thinks he's right. At least he thinks he's right. At least he thinks he's doing something good.
More jealousy than
I was jealous of them.
Yeah, he really wanted. He wanted that Torah or not. He wanted to be.
So he couldn't judge him favorably because he was jealous.
Yeah, because it was like this aspect of it, you know, a feeling about them. He wanted to become a Talmud, you know, but he was.
He was jealous. Yeah.
Maybe he had so much reverence for them, really, that they were more than just people to him. And so he would judge people on a certain level, regular people.
But not upless
people.
They were
beyond the point of
judging. Held to a higher standard.
Right.
Yeah. Now, he didn't actually have any sinna for them before. He was perfectly at peace with them. It's just that he wanted to fight
break
them
the bones,
in terms of, was it Tachir?
Yeah, no, they'll never forget it. They'll never forget such a rebuke, right?
To be,
so bite the bone. So Tosfos says, Rebbeinu Tam says, the reason he was so upset at the Talmid Chachamim is because the way Talmid Chachamim treated Amei Ha'aretz, that we have a few halachas in regards to Talmid Chachamim. For instance, their clothes are considered midras tuma. The clothes of the Amei Ha'aretz are considered tuma. So the Talmid Chachamim wouldn't even touch an Amei Ha'aretz. Talmid Chachamim wouldn't touch an Amei Ha'aretz. Not because it was a Torah prohibition to touch them, because they wanted to be extra holy and separate from all forms of evil, and they're afraid the Amei Ha'aretz, who are not careful with their deeds, were Tomei, and therefore they wouldn't even touch an Amei Ha'aretz. There was a tremendous they held themselves too high above other people. They elevated themselves above other people, the Amei Ha'aretz, and Rabbi Kiva was upset about that. Rabbi Kiva was upset about their apparently arrogant behavior towards Amei Ha'aretz. So that's what Rabbeinu Tam said. But it's still like, why didn't you judge him favorably? Still like, the child's still there. Okay, don't explain it to be arrogant behavior. Explain that they really want to be holy, and this is really the way they should conduct themselves. And at least according to their mistaken way of thinking, at least they think they're doing the right thing. So I think the answer is that Rebbe Kiva was so sensitive to other people's feelings that, of course, he was done with Talmid Chachamim Lekav Zchusa, but it doesn't matter, because the end result was the Amei Ha'aretz felt rejected by the Talmid Chachamim. So since the Amei Ha'aretz felt despised, I could be metarius what you do, Talmid Chachamim, 1,000 times over, but because you're mezalzel, or it comes out a zilzel in the feelings, in the honor and respect of other Jews, that because of such tremendous pain that he felt for other Jews who were offended by this behavior, even though they shouldn't have been, they should have been Melamed Zchus. But the bottom line was, not everybody was a Rebbe Akiva who was so Melamed Zchus. So he was angry at the Talmid Chachamim for behaving like this because they caused so much pain. And that he wasn't willing to be Tekilu, he wasn't willing to be Mogul, because of tremendous sensitivity to people's feelings, to people's respect and honor. Now there's a story which I read, and Halavai, I could find it again. I don't remember for sure the sefer I saw it in. I think it was brought down in the name of Baal Shem Tov. There was a certain godel in Europe, Eastern Europe, remember? And he was dying, and it was a horrible death. He was dying, and I think the Baal Shem Tov came to visit himself, or it was revealed to the Baal Shem Tov. I don't remember the details. And right before he died, he revealed this godel. He was an abbasin, I think. He revealed that. People like were very upset. He died this horrible death, some horrible disease he had. He was dying with tremendous suffering and pain in a very, very, very horrific fashion. And right before he died, he said, "I've been through this, many, many times already. Every time I died in previous lifetimes, every time I died, it was in a horrible way. So yeah, it's already been going on for a few thousand years." So he says he's not worried anymore because it's the last time. This is the final tikkun. So he said, what was the problem? Why was it decreed upon him to come back so many times into the world and die such a horrific death? Why? So he said, because he was the Av Beis Din at the times of Zechariah the prophet. He was their head of the Sanhedrin in the previous Gilgal. And he was mevaze an Amei Ha'aretz. He slapped an Amei Ha'aretz in the face for whatever it was. But he disgraced an Amei Ha'aretz. So that Amei Ha'aretz was so offended, and he hated Talmid Chachamim so much after that he was the first one to throw a rock at Zechariah. Zechariah Novi was murdered, and they stoned him. The Jewish people stoned Zechariah Novi, and the first person who started throwing the rocks was this person who the Av Beis Din slapped. And he said, because in that previous guild I caused the Amei Oretz to hate Talmidei Chachamim. And then result was, look, Zechariah got murdered in a horrible way. He was stoned to death. His blood was boiling in the ground for generations, for years. So Mida Keneged Mida, since I was indirectly the one who increased his hate for Talmidei Chachamim, I had to be put through this. And for thousands of years, who knows how many times he had to go through this tremendous Yisurim, and finally reached his final tikkun during the times of the Baal Shem Tov. Al Kaponim, you see the tremendous severity of kovod, of treating somebody properly. That the Rebbein Shem would punish a person who was a great person in Torah, head of the Sanhedrin in the times of Zechariah and Novi, had to be a great, great person. But he's had to suffer for thousands of years because in Amoritz, you think the head of the Sanhedrin slapped this Amoritz for no good reason? He deserved it! He for sure deserved it to be slapped. But what he didn't take into calculation was that he was increasing hatred, he was increasing the hatred towards Talmidei Chachamim, that the Am Ha'aretz feels so slighted from what appears to be an arrogant behavior that for that he has to be punished. Look at the results. The results was it brought to Shlichus coming to murder. So Rebbe Kiva was right. You see, Rebbe Kiva was right in a way for hating Talmidei Chachamim. In a way, he was right. On some level, he was right for hating Talmidei Chachamim. You see how severe the Rebbeinu Shlom punished this Av Beis Din for sliding down Amei Ha'aretz. So it brings to a tremendous, and the Baal Shem Tov brings a tremendous to cause this zilzul, this belittling of another Jew as ignorant as he may be, ultimately brings to the destruction of Torah. Ultimately brings to the destruction of Torah and Talmidei Chachamim to Torah. So do we have grounds now to criticize Talmidei Chachamim who conducted themselves in such a fashion? In the Gemara, you see, they were prushim, that were noegim b'dushi aseira, that they conducted themselves with tremendous sanctity, and they separated from Amei Oretz. And we don't find that the Gemara criticizes them anywhere for doing so, with the exception of perhaps this Tosus in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, which doesn't say explicitly that Talmidei Chachamim were wrong. It says that's what Rabbi Kiva felt. So I think it depends. There are Talmidei Chachamim who could do it and not be offensive in any way, and there were probably Talmidei Chachamim who could do it and be extremely offensive. You could be noyeg, you could be living in a very, very sanctified way and very much in precious, and if a person was holy enough and sensitive enough, you could fulfill both things. And if you weren't, you could step on a lot of people's toes along the way. And that ultimately brings to destruction of Torah. Now, the other example we have of this is Rabbi Akiva himself, that his Talmidim, Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, he had 12,000 pairs of Talmidim, according to one years in the Gemara, it was 24,000, or 12,000 Talmidim, whatever it was, whether it was 12,000 or 24,000 Talmidim, there was the biggest yeshiva in the world, in world history. That we don't have any yeshiva today that has even 12,000 Talmidim, let alone 24,000 Talmidim. And they all died. They all died between Pesach and Shavuos. All of them. Nobody left. Of this tremendous malchus of Torah, nothing left. Completely obliterated. And the Gemara says the world was shonen. The world was completely desolate when they died from Torah. Until Rabbi Kiva came to the great Chachamim, to the great Chachamim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, the five great Talmidim, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, and from them he regenerated the Torah. If it wouldn't have been for Rabbi Kiva, can you imagine how Rabbi Kiva felt after losing 24,000 students? He didn't give up. I'll find more Talmidim. Took a new Talmidim. Five Talmidim from 24,000 to 5. That's a pretty big downgrade, right? 24,000 to 5. He took these five Talmidim. And he took five Talmidim. The most famous among them, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, although all these people are pillars of Torah Baal Peh, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, Reb Meir, Reb Yehuda, Reb Yoshi, Reb Loza Ben Shamua, these are the pillars of Torah Baal Peh, and from that he brought back the Torah into the world. So the question is, why did they die, these 24,000 of them? Because they didn't treat each other with respect. Doesn't say they violated any Torah law. They were not found guilty of missing Kriya Shema ever, or Bitul Torah, or Chas V'Shalom eating non-kosher food, or Chas V'Shalom worse things than that, or even minor things. Nothing. You look at the 613 commandments, they didn't violate even one of them. But they didn't treat each other respectfully, and for that, they destroyed. Now what? So why doesn't the Russian like kill everybody who's got that embracing personality then? All these people walking around, you know, were pretty offensive, right? Don't shoot the covet? Because these 24,000 people were the pillars of Torah. They were the conduits of Torah for the next generation. And Torah that is connected with Zilzul, Torah which brings about a lowering of the honor of any human being is not Torah. So the Rebbe didn't mind to destroy all of the Torah that came out of Rebbe Akiva's Talmudim. Because if it's associated with belittling another person, that cannot be an everlasting Torah. That cannot bring to the ongoing chain of Mesorah that will assure the eternal transmission of Torah from generation to generation in its pure form. To assure that, it has to be on the highest level of purity. For instance, the Mishkan, the tabernacle that Moshe built, was never destroyed. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The first one was destroyed. The second one was destroyed. So why is this one? Because the first one was built on such a level of purity, it was impossible for a human being to destroy it. Physically impossible, a human being could not destroy the Mishkan. Second base of Mikdash, which was built on such a high level of Kedusha and Tara, already it was possible that a human being could overcome it. So Torah that can last forever, that will reach the end of generations in its purest sense, to the extent that we can still refine ourselves as Bnei Torah and live as Yidden should live, to bring Nachas to the Rebbeinu Shlom, that comes through our learning of Torah. You didn't get it anywhere else, that's what you came to Yeshiva for, right? And it works, right? It works. The only reason why it works is because we got the Torah through those types of people. That the Shalshelas HaTorah, the transmission of the Torah, came through people who were on the highest level of Kedusha and Tara, and didn't cause any belittling or harm to the feelings and honor of another Jew. Right? That we see how intimately Torah is bound up with honoring another person, with respecting another human being, to the extent that transmission of Torah is totally interrupted, totally broken if it's not there. It's not a coincidence then we understand that v'ahavta l'reacha kamoicha zatam v'lechem, that loving your fellow Jew as yourself is the biggest fundamental in Torah. Who said that? Rebbe Akiva said that. And he learned it from here, probably. I don't know when Rebbe Akiva came up with that, but it makes sense that Rebbe Akiva learned this lesson after this 24,000 Talmidim died. The seeds of it, you see, Rebbe Akiva had. Rebbe Akiva, even before he learned Torah, he was a person who couldn't judge a person unfavorably, and even the Talmidei Chachamim that he hated, it was because of their the zilzul that was felt by the Amei Oretz. He could not discount that. He could not overlook that, what was happening to the Amei Ha'aretz. In Kol Zeh, you see, Rebbe Akiva was able to overcome that and come learn. How did Rebbe Akiva come to Gaon? Rebbe Akiva had to learn from Talmidei Chachamim, right? there was a certain klipa, I don't know exactly what it was, there was a certain thing he had to break through in order to get to that. But Rabbi Akiva, despite his animosity towards Talmidei Chachamim, was able to submit himself and to subordinate himself to Talmidei Chachamim. He was a special person. Despite all this, he had good tainas on the Talmidei Chachamim. But he was able to put that aside in the end, which was a tremendous godless and nefesh, in order to become the great Talmid Chacham of the Kiva. So this is a time when right, we spoke about last night before. It's like a person could look at the times of Sfira, oh, I can't take a haircut. What do we think? Sfira's Omer. No haircuts, no music, no merrymaking, right? That's Sfira's Omer. That's Sfira's Omer. So this is a great, this is not Sfira's Omer. Sfira's Omer is that we lost the Talmid of Rabbi Kiva. And why did we lose the Talmid of Rabbi Kiva? Because there wasn't enough sensitivity to another person's honor and the feelings of another Jew. That's why we lost the Torah of Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim. So how can I take a haircut? It's a horrible thing happened. That's the Seder, that's the way we should go through Torah and Mitzvahs. Right, like we said last night, the first thing we think about is the law, is the prohibition, but we have to think about what's behind the conduct of the mitzvah in order to really utilize the mitzvahs for the purpose that they were given. He reads the Meiri, a very beautiful Meiri. The Meiri says, Eis lasos l'Hashem eferus rosefa. Eis lasos l'Hashem. When it's a time to do Hashem's mitzvahs, it's a critique, it's a criticism. And the Pasuk in Tehillim, that even when they do mitzvahs, they nullify Hashem's Torah. The Meiri says, it goes to the Meiri, that when a person does mitzvahs without the proper sensitivity and understanding of the meaning of the mitzvah and the intent of the mitzvah, so he just does, he goes from mitzvah to mitzvah and he does them. Like on Pesach, he eats matzah, and in Sukkot, he sits in the Sukkah and takes the Dal Aminim. And he says, the Meiri says, it's like a donkey that carries the sheaves in the times of the wheat harvest, and when there's a grape gathering, he carries grapes, and when there's vegetables or whatever, he puts on produce on the back of the donkey, and he just carries the burden. He carries the burden from different times of year, different things grow, so they change the burden on his back. Says the Meiri, he says, a person goes through mitzvahs from time to time, when these mitzvahs come up, like every mitzvah has a special intent to it, has a special meaning, has a special sensitivity to it, has a special feeling that we're supposed to feel towards the mitzvah, and an understanding that we're supposed to develop towards the mitzvah, and appreciation that we're supposed to have towards the mitzvah. It's not just, I did mitzvahs all day, what do you want from me, Rabbi Yisrael? I did mitzvahs. Says, it's good, you did the mitzvahs like a donkey. Says, when the time, there's special times, every mitzvah has a special time, has a special special nuances to it, has a special atmosphere, has a special intent to it. The time of Sirsa Omer is a special time, like Sukkot is a special time, and Pesach is a special time, Sirsa Omer is a special time also. Every mitzvah has its special time and its special purpose, and if you're not sensitive to the Eis Lasos Hashem, you're not sensitive to the at least the basic meaning, the differences between mitzvahs. It's like a person goes to a garden, he goes to a rose garden, right? But you had a rose garden, all the roses are the same color, same shape. It's beautiful, a lot of roses. That's not a rose garden. Rose gardens, you got dozens of different types of roses, and they have different fragrances and different shapes and different colors and different heights. And they went to the rose garden and says, yeah, all I saw was roses. Just roses. What a boring idea. It was just roses. A bunch of from rose to rose to rose to rose. Are you idiot? Were you blind? You didn't see? This one has 6 petals, and that one has 10 petals. These ones were orange. These ones were purple. These ones have fragrance. These ones don't have fragrance. These ones grow tall. These ones grow low. These grow, when the sun comes up, they face towards. Didn't you see all the godly? You didn't see any of that? No, you might as well have just been a donkey walking through here. You didn't see it. You saw there were flowers. So it's a tremendous, tremendous to coming from the Meiri, tremendous critique of in doing mitzvahs, that we should be sensitive to the special flavor and fragrance and intent of the mitzvah, and in this time, especially in the times of Sfiras Omer, to elevate our sensitivity, improve our sensitivity of kavod azulos, of honoring another person, not letting another person, chas v'shalom, feel for a moment chalishus hadas, not to cause any despair or any sense of rejection or dishonor to another person. What a horrible thing to think that caused pain to another human being. How would I feel? How do I feel when somebody says something insulting to me? Why would I want to do that to somebody else? Well, what hanoah? What possible benefit? You know, if a person with insects really makes no sense at all. It's like the nofash, who just bites to kill. What benefit? I got that. So what did you get from it? It's a real gasus hanefesh. It's a tremendous. It's a horrible midah, but I mean, to a certain extent, we're at times we're all guilty of it. We have to mechazik ourselves, especially at this time, to improve in that midah. Halavai, if we come out of Sfiras HaOmer, especially in preparation for Lag BaOmer, Rabbi Kiva's Yortzeit, who taught us this concept and lived, unfortunately, this concept by losing the 24,000 talmidim. Halavai, we shall be zoicha to. I don't know. Maybe we can once and for all. Just we'll never do it again. We'll never say anything hurting or harmful to him, or cause the despair to another Jew. Halavai, if that would come out of the Sfiras HaOmer, and even if we can't get to that level, and we just improve ourselves, then we really use the time in the system.
Do I have a short?
Yes.